Welcome back into another episode of George in the Jungle, presented by Remington Tavern. Remington Tavern can be found at 8892 Glendale Milford Road, 45140, where they have their daily happy hour from 3 to 7 p.m., $5 bourbon whiskey Wednesdays, bottle cap bonanza Thursdays from 7 to 9 p.m. You can find them on Instagram at RemyTavCincy, that's R-E-M-I-T-A-V, Cincy with a Y, or follow them on Facebook. With that said, George, it's been a week. How we doing?
Doing good, Aaron. How are you? I should have filled this up before I started this. Almost empty. Notice the Hearst name, too.
That's about, what, one pinky there?
Yeah, there's not much in there. I got to keep drinking out of this Hearst stuff, so they keep sending those pension checks. So I just gave them some pot. Hopefully Remington Tavern doesn't mind that cheap plug for the Hearst Corporation.
There you go. Yeah, I bought a new car this weekend. We got a new addition, you know, to the family coming in June. So we upped it to the Grand Highlander.
And, wow. Okay. I just bought a Highlander hybrid not all that long ago.
Yeah, we didn't want to get the hybrid. We went with the pure gas.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, you need all that extra pickup when you're towing those kids and those toys.
Yeah. It was either that or
car seats.
It was either that one or a minivan. So we opted with the SUV.
You got a good choice there. That's a solid vehicle. I really like mine. The thing is, though, you'll be loading those car seats in and out. And, like, you don't remember car seats back in the old days. Like, now.
No,
these things.
Ours turns.
Yeah, I mean,
ours,
it's unbelievable.
Yeah, ours turns.
And they're more protection than what guys had when they went up in the Mercury space capsule. It's like the first time I put one of these new ones in with a grandkid, it's like, my God, where's the bubble wrap for the kid, too? I mean, geez. Of course, I grew up, we didn't even have car seats for kids. You'd see kids crawling around in the back window and up in the dash. That was legal. It was legal. It's. I'm not joking. It was unbelievable. And when you think about those times, it's like, holy smokes, the stuff that you would do and you would let kids do when you're driving around. Hell, sometimes you'd let them drive.
Goodness. Well, we are, what, it's Tuesday, so we're 2 days, I believe, right?
Two days away. I heard them giving weather updates for Detroit on the local radio today in case you were going up for the draft. They wanted to let you know what the weather would be up there, which I had never heard such a thing before, but they did it.
Do you like this new format that's been going on the last couple of years where they base the draft out over 3 days as opposed to 2 days?
I didn't at first. I really didn't. And, okay, so last year was the first time I could watch the draft and not be working and pressed for time and worried about when the Bengals pick was going to be and how miserable it was going to make my life if it was just before 11 o'clock. And I sat and watched that draft last year, the first round, totally expecting to be bored, to not like it, and to think it was overdone and way too much. And I actually really liked it. And I'm okay with this format. And I get why the NFL does it. I mean, and it's great reality television. I didn't like it at first. I definitely didn't like it for my job. But as a fan, it's kind of cool. And that first big night with the first round picks and, you know, they get all that pomp and circumstance and you get to see all the crazy stuff these dudes are wearing and see the reaction of the moms and the family. And I was totally expecting not to want to sit through all that and enjoy that television show. And I enjoyed the heck out of it. So I have to say, surprisingly, yes, all those years I worked, I didn't necessarily like it because I just liked to get it over with in one day, like the good old days. But yeah. I kind of like it.
I don't know. once the first round, I know they love to drag the first round out and everybody's got a story and you have to have your little segment on every player who's selected. And I could do with or without that. That's fine. It's a production.
You're totally sounding like I used to.
it's a production now. I get it. But I just want there to be, I missed the three rounds, like getting the first three rounds, the first big rounds out of the way. And then the second day goes relatively quickly from rounds four through seven. I miss those days. I would block out that weekend and just sit myself in front of the TV for roughly, I don't know what, 6 hours between the 2 days or right. however long it took. So I don't love that I have to now block out an additional evening. That's just me.
And I will admit, I keep an eye on Friday night, or I did last year pretty well, but by Saturday I'm off golfing or what, I'm checking the phone to see who they got, because by then, you know, most of it's a bunch of names you're not all that familiar with. I mean, you might be with certain ones, but, you know, you're more interested in kind of what position they went after and where some guys might fit in with the current roster. But, you know, when way back when, it wasn't even on television. I mean, there was no draft television show. Sometimes you just have to wait. Maybe you would get word of mouth on the radio. And I remember they used to do a radio. I remember Bob Trumpy would do like a radio show with Jerry Jones, who put out the drugstore list. And they would, and that's probably when the draft first got on ESPN, and they would do that. And you could keep up that way, or if you had cable and could watch the draft on ESPN. But God, that was so long ago. There were a lot of times you kind of had to wait for the local news to come on if you weren't around the radio, if you were working a job or something. And they had it starting in the morning too. It would be like a Tuesday morning. They would have the first round from 8 a.m. to, you know, 9:30 or whatever it was, and just roll on through all the rounds. I probably shouldn't say this. I remember one draft. I didn't know what the heck. I got in a little trouble, okay? I've got two bad draft experiences. You tell me which one you think is the worst. So 1995, the Bengals are drafting sixth. It's a Saturday when they're going to have the draft, the first round. And I'm off on Saturday, and I'm like, okay, if something crazy happens, I'm around to help. But, you know, the Bengals sucked back in the 90s and 95. They were no good. So it wasn't that big of a deal until I decide Friday night, I'm going to go Taiwan on somewhere. So I'm completely blottoed. I wake up and it's noon and I've got a banging headache, and I find out the Bengals just traded up to the first slot to take Kajana Carter, and I got to go to work. And I mean, so that happened that time. How happy was I? And then another time when I was a young man, and I let's just say I got some bad legal advice, and I had to wait for the local news to come on the television in the Brown County Jail to see who the hell the Bengals drafted. So I'm sitting there. True. And, oh, God. Earlier that day, there was a guy, like, he's like, God, I'm glad it's Tuesday. I'm like, why? Because the draft's today. He goes, no, Tuesday we get bologna sandwiches. And I'm like, my God, I really am in a bad space if I've got dudes around me looking forward to a bologna sandwich on Tuesday for lunch. I thought he was looking forward to the NFL draft like I was.
Was it a good lunch, though?
No, it wasn't. I gave him mine. And then there's like, you know, 10 to 12 of us jailbirds watching a black and white, you know, 19-inch television or whatever it was. And I think I'm the only one who really knew what the Bengals were then. So those are my two big draft nightmares. You know, everything else has been it's an exciting night, though. It's and the NFL has made it into something that you see other leagues trying to do the same thing. And the NBA draft gets a good bit of play. But, you know, baseball tries to replicate it, but it just doesn't have the same impact because these aren't guys you're going to be seeing play, you know, play right away for your team. It's just a different animal. But it's going to be a big night. And, you know, like every year, when that night comes, I'll be very anxious to see what the Bengals do and who they end up with.
Well, there's been some reports coming out this week as the draft is ever getting closer. And seems that Elizabeth Blackburn has been more and more involved this as her tenure with the team has continued. She seems to just be getting more and more involved every offseason. And this offseason, it's being reported that she is involved in a key role in supporting scouting and evaluating college players with analytics and projection. And that comes via Mike Petraglia. But what are your thoughts as Elizabeth Blackburn is becoming just quite the figure in the front office?
Yeah, it's very interesting. And it's very interesting the way they talked about it today, in that, you know, almost like this other set of eyes completely outside of that coaching bubble, which I think is a good idea. I think it's a great idea because those guys drilled down so deep. Do you know how mired in stuff they are right now on every one of these guys? And, you know, they're looking at everything. And it's kind of nice to have somebody maybe not so buried in the forest of this stuff. And it speaks to what has happened in this organization over the last several years when they have allowed people like that to maybe have a little bigger role and spread things out a little bit. Because I think, you know, it was kind of Mike and Marvin for a long time. You know, before that, it was Mike. And I think they're getting to the point now where maybe they're getting there. I mean, I can't sit here and say I don't have the numbers in front of me now. Obviously, they didn't have as big a personnel department as most teams. In fact, probably had the smallest for a long time, and it was damn near non-existent. But, you know, they've expanded that, and it just seems like they have gotten into the real world of the NFL now and are operating like most of the other successful franchises are. And that has not always been the case. And, you know, there's just it was funny to hear that, because I'm not sure it is good just to have that outside view and, like, you know, giving her more of a role like that obviously is someone everybody in that organization believes is a sharp cookie and might be able to spot some things and, you know, just help them out from time to time if she sees something that's obvious that they happen to be missing. That's easy to do when you're that deep into the weeds of an NFL draft.
Yeah, it's just fascinating to me the way that this team has run things in getting the whole family involved, really, between Katie and Troy and now Elizabeth. Mike Brown obviously taking the reins from his father, Paul Brown. Here in the chat here, Randy asks for you to comment on Paul Brown. Did he ever let you interview him?
Yeah, I did. Probably probably 2 to 3 years before he passed away, I met him down at Riverfront Stadium, and I was still like getting my feet wet. And we were doing some Bengals special. I bet I talked to him for an hour, did an interview. It was fascinating. And this dude knew everything. He had stories upon stories. You know, back in the days when he was coaching and stuff, you know, he told a story about this kid they drafted out of Notre Dame in the first round. And this was when he was with Cleveland. And he saw this dude from another team in their stands on the first day of training camp. Their training camp up in Berea, and he sees this dude, and he knows he works for another team. So he also knew this kid they drafted, they'd seen enough of him that he wasn't going to cut it. So he had his offensive lineman just let this guy wreak havoc that day. So the next day, they get a phone call wanting to know if they want to make a deal for that kid. So Paul traded him away. And I don't know if the kid was a first-round pick. But stuff like that happened back then. Like it was like you had to you know, it was the old shoe leather thing. You had to go somewhere to see this stuff, and you didn't know. In fact, there was a guy in the early 60s that, I think it was Sports Illustrated did it, put out a name of some kid that didn't exist and was talking about how great he was, and a team drafted this guy, and he didn't exist. So crap like that has happened. But Paul was fascinating. He remembered, like, stuff. I didn't realize how great of an athlete he was in high school. I think he was a state high jump champ. You know, obviously a hell of a football player. He was, man, that dude, you talk about a football and sporting life. And, yeah, he was something else. And he, by the time I got to him, you know, I'd heard the stories from the older guys and how hardcore he was as a coach. But he lightened up a lot. He used to joke around with us about, you know, the high school games and the blitz and, you know, if Madeira's going to beat Indian Hill and stuff like that. He was something else. He was a very, very sharp man with a sense of humor and obviously knew football inside and out. But Paul was amazing. Just that's people will ask me what my favorite interview was. And even though it was one of my early ones, that's probably my favorite one of all time is Paul.
Well, then the follow-up question has to be, what were your interviews with Mike like?
I did one with him not all that long. It's probably been 6 years ago, seven, because he usually only talks now, does television on the pre-training camp luncheon day. And then he may rarely speak at a news conference. But to sit down and get him one-on-one, so I wanted to do something on the old – you know, Browns-Bengals rivalry and what happened with the Browns and them, you know, Paul being fired by Art Modell, that whole thing. And Mike agreed to do the interview as long as we stuck on that. He didn't want to talk about current-day Bengals issues or whatever. And they were actually playing okay at that time. But he was funny, too. That's what will surprise you is how
– surprise me.
His sense of humor, it's very dry, but he will knife you. He will absolutely shiv you with his sense of humor if he finds reason to or just wants to enjoy himself. He's got a definite, dry, sharp sense of humor. And he was fascinating, too. He remembered, like, being a ball boy and talking about people like Marion Motley and guys like that that were his heroes. It was... yeah, that was honestly, that was a damn fun interview too.
Well, and wanted to
surprisingly, I didn't think he was going to be that open, and he talked about all that stuff and how badly his father, when he got a hold of the Bengals, wanted to beat the Browns, just wanted to beat their brains in for what happened up there.
One of the guys who covers the Bengals. Joe Goodberry, he writes that on Twitter that the Bengals' biggest 23 needs are before the draft. I think you meant 2024. But was wide receiver 3, a corner that can start, an offensive tackle 3, a defensive tackle 3, a nose tackle 1, and a running back 3. I guess that maybe that was 23, but what do you feel like the current needs are? If you had to put, I don't know, a list of three to five together.
I'm going back and forth on, you know, offensive tackle and interior defensive lineman.
At 1 and 2,
you know, DJ Reader leaving, and I know they signed Rankins. You got BJ Hill back, but you want to be able to rotate those guys, keep them fresh.
Sure.
That's a big deal. And I think that's a big, big area of need. And, you know, obviously if the kid from Texas is there, I think you got to pounce, right?
Byron Murphy?
Yeah, I think you do. But I've been, you know, you look at that franchise quarterback and you want to keep him upright as long as possible. And you know how, you know, you can never have too many good offensive linemen. And so I worry about that as well. And I'm sure they're having a hell of an internal discussion. And they've probably drilled down enough that they know, player A is there, that's their guy. If it's B, if it's C, they probably have that down pretty pat. And I'm sure it comes down to this. It comes down, they know what the need is. They know where they need help. It's just which one of the two is better, because you got to take the better player. If it's the offensive tackle that's better than the defensive lineman, you think overall that's going to have more success in the league, you got to go that way. You got to take the guy that's going to overall be the better player. But those are the two biggest areas of need to me. And they do, you know, need a third wide receiver. They need to address that, because, you know, we don't know where T. Higgins is going to be in a year. We may not even know where he's going to be this fall. I think he'll be here. But there's also, you know, it's possible that second wide receiver from LSU falls into their lap, and maybe they want to do that. I would say interior defensive line. Then I would say offensive tackle. And as we've talked about before, it'd be nice to address that guard position at some point too.
Yeah, I guess the worst case scenario as far as that third receiver spot goes, Tyler Boyd's still available. He's still a free agent.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And I assume that price tag drops significantly after the draft as opposed to before the draft. Yeah. So,
yes.
We talked about doing this, so I'm going to share my screen here and get this underway. Again, the draft is in just a couple of days. Did pull up the draft simulator from Pro Football Focus. Just wanted to see who was available and what our thoughts were. So getting started with this draft. Jaden Daniels, I think, went 3. Brock Bowers goes to the Raiders. So we'll go look at this. Caleb Williams, number 1. Drake May, number 2. Jaden Daniels, number 3, to the Patriots. Joe Alt, number 4, to the Cardinals. Marvin Harrison Jr., number 5, to the Chargers. J.J. McCarthy at 6 to the Giants. Malik Nabers to the Titans. Dallas Turner to the Falcons. Rome Odunze, I think that's how you pronounce it, to Chicago at 9. Talais Fuaga at 10 to the Jets. Fashanu to the Vikings at 11. Kenyon Mitchell at 12 to the Broncos. Brock Bowers at 13 to the Raiders. Graham Barton at 14 to Duke. J.C. Latham at 15 to the Colts. At 16, Terrion Arnold to the Seahawks. At 17, Brian Thomas Jr. to the Jags. So at 18, you've
My
got...
My God, Newton's still sitting there.
Yep.
Newton's there. Murphy's there. I'll take either one of those.
Fautanu from Washington, also available.
You know, Bengals might like it because apparently he plays really, really nasty. And I know their offensive line coach appreciates that kind of thing. So that'll be an interesting little dilemma if it falls like that. I'm not sure it will. But, boy, oh, boy, I think the Bengals would take this situation all day, every day.
Amarius Mims.
Sitting there.
Amarius Mims is another name, the tackle from Georgia. Adonai Mitchell, the receiver from Texas. Even guys like JPJ, the center from Oregon. I wouldn't love a center, but he has been a name that has been tied to the Bengals with some people. Cornerback went – I saw somewhere today that cornerback dropped from plus 1,000 to, I believe, all the way down to plus 450, plus 550, something like that.
Really?
This week, I believe today. So, again, even at corner, that wouldn't be – the craziest thing, apparently. We've seen corner is a spot that is consistently decimated by injury, and you can never, ever, ever in the NFL have enough cornerbacks. So that wouldn't be the biggest shock in the world.
You got to have them. The way the league is throwing the ball around, you got to have them.
It would also be consistent with something the Bengals do, and they have not drafted a cornerback in – several years at the number one spot. So that wouldn't be the craziest thing in the world to me. I'd I mean, even with the edge there from UCLA, Latu, Newton from Illinois there, this is maybe the best case scenario for the Bengals.
It really is. I mean, so, I don't think that's going to happen, but geez. I you know,
there's
not side of it. I honest to God, I wouldn't have thought Newton was going to still be there when the Bengals draft at all. In fact, I was kind of convinced Murphy wouldn't be. I really was. I thought they might have. I thought Latham, the dude from Bama, might still be around. I thought he might be in that mix of tackles they would look at, but I think they would take one of those other guys over him if they were around. Yeah, I did not expect all of that to be available at 18.
If you had a situation like this, I would hope that the Bengals, truthfully, either are so excited because they have a guy who's on a different tier available in this type of situation, and they're running to the podium. Or I don't know that you trade back behind Pittsburgh, but if there's a situation where you can trade with LA and still get a guy who's on the same level as whoever you were going to pick with this pick, I think that that's a situation where if you can make a deal with LA there, I think you do so. And like I said, just as long as you don't end up putting yourself behind the Steelers, I feel like too many situations where the Steelers have jumped ahead of the Bengals and taken the guy who at least I wanted at that point in time. And I can't imagine that it hasn't been the situation at least a couple times for the Bengals. So I would not like to see, unless the Steelers have already traded it up ahead of you, that would just be one of my concerns there.
Yeah, they did it 1 year with a linebacker, and they did it with an offensive lineman once too. All of that's been in the last, I don't know, 10 years or less. But man, I don't know. The Bengals would have any option they would want if all those guys are available.
I agree. That, like I said, I think that's the only guy that you're missing that's been tied to the Bengals at that point, I believe, would be either Brian Thomas, J.C. Latham, or Brock Bowers there. I think everybody else has been linked to other people. So I don't know. That's an awful lot when you're tying roughly what 5 to 8 names to a team, and you're only missing 2 or 3 of those 5 to 8 names. That's an awful lot of options for you there.
Who's at the top of this one? Who is it? The 3 quarterbacks? Do they just kind of have that locked in at the top of the round?
Yeah, Caleb Williams, Drake May, and Jaden Daniels. Yep.
Yeah.
The PFF does say that the Bengals' biggest needs are at tight end, tackle, and defensive interior, for whatever that's worth. So kind of where our
tight end. I mean, they've got that covered for this year, at least, you know, as long as, you know, Gesicki stays healthy. I think he can be productive, but it is a 1-year deal. I think it would be very interesting if Brock Bowers was available. I'm not saying I 100% would take him, but then again, you know, that's a weapon, and you're getting a rookie contract on a dude like that, I don't know. That might be too much to resist. I just wonder what the Bengals inside really think of that, because I will say this about them and their drafting, and since it's gotten a lot better over the last several years, maybe the last 10 plus since, you know, Duke's really had a big hand in it. They actually seem to have a consensus for the most part. Now, the John Ross thing, that was a total whiff. That was totally screwed up, and I've got some thoughts on that. I don't know that anybody wanted him except maybe somebody in the front office who might sign the checks. But I think that outside of that, they've done pretty well. And I think they've always, you know, since Zach's been here, been able to come to a pretty good consensus on both sides of the ball, what they need, who they prioritize, and they all seem to be on the same page when draft night rolls around. And so I would just love to know what they think of Bowers at this point, if he'd be sitting around there. I don't think he will be. I just I've seen too much smoke here over the past week that he's going to go, you know, probably be gone by 10 or 12.
Well, time will tell. It'd be a little odd. This was the Raiders taking him at 13. The Raiders also just took Mayer last year.
Mayer, yeah, that pick makes no sense.
So, but yeah, I agree. That wouldn't make any sense. And tight end is not.
They would want to trade Michael Mayer to the Bengals for something, you know, after take that.
That wouldn't be so bad.
I'm a homer for him.
We'll have plenty to talk about next week, though, on the Bengals, as we'll have, 8 selections as it currently stands, unless they trade and get more. But plenty of picks there.
2 third rounders, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So
and that's plenty, cool. plenty that's of good capital to have. I mean, they've found jewels in the third round.
So plenty of Bengals to talk next week. But switching gears here. As your Cincinnati Reds were victorious tonight, 8-1 against Philly. These Reds are really good at home, but since we last spoke, they finished up their series against the Mariners where they got swept out in Seattle. Not great, but of course they come back home, turn it around, and sweep the Angels before dropping a stinker to the Phillies last night, 7-0, despite Hunter Green's best effort. 7 innings, 4 runs. Can't really ask for a much. That's not a fantastic outing, but it's also not bad, especially coming a game after you lost Frankie Montas on a comebacker at 101 miles an hour. Then they get a bounce back win tonight, 8-1. It's a weird season. They are completely snake bitten by this injury bug. As Frankie Montas becomes the latest. He's supposedly only going to miss 2 starts. He's on the 15-day DL. We'll see. But they did have a reliever come back as Sam Moll was activated off the IL.
Oh, he was activated. I thought he was – I'll be darned.
He was activated today. India, Fraley, and Justin Wilson are all significantly healthier. Do with that what you will. And then Friedel is, I guess, ahead of schedule as he has been hitting off the tee. So we'll see what that means. But what a weird season so far, as it seems that everyone has either been injured or sick, missing games with illness at some point so far.
Yeah, you know, they had Fraley and India dealing with that this week and this weekend. You know, you sweep the White Sox, get swept by the Mariners, then you sweep the Angels. The only thing I'm a little concerned about early on, it is early, but you got to play good against the good teams, and it's too small of a sample to even, like, really go too crazy on that. But we're going to find out because coming up, you know, you're playing the Phillies, who are a good team, right? Win tonight. It'd be nice to take 3 out of 4, but given that they dropped that first one, we'll take a split at this point. But hopefully they can get it done. It'd be nice to take, you know, to beat some of these better teams. Then they go out and play the Rangers, and then they're at San Diego, who isn't all that bad. And they're playing on the road. And so we're going to find out a lot more about them here in the next couple of weeks. But given what they've been through and the injuries you cited and, you know, the illnesses and all that, and even the struggles with some of the pitching and then, you know, the offense disappeared out in Seattle. And again, last night, I'm kind of pleased where they are record-wise. There's nothing to complain about there. You know, we're also seeing Ellie De La Cruz just take off again. I mean, this guy, to do what he did, you know, that game, was it Saturday the game or which one did he walk 4 times? That was the game, right? Because he had the home run Friday night. Am I confused?
I think you're right.
It's an impact no matter what. As long as that man gets on base, he has such an impact on the game. It's amazing the pressure he puts on defense. And he, It's crazy. And is he still striking out too much? Yeah, but it's not. I mean, he's also hitting, what, 280-something, 290? He's driving in runs. He's stealing base. He's producing runs. And I think he's kind of making that adjustment now that we had talked about, and he's going to be something else. I mean, this is no joke. And the way he has come alive here lately and really come through for them when they needed him to help win a couple of these games, it's fun to watch. So that's a huge positive for them. You know, some of these guys need to get going. CES has to, and I think he will. Candelario's a veteran. I don't think he's washed up. I think he will. Will Benson probably needs to pick it up a little bit. We will see where that leads. And then obviously Indy is having that, been having to play a good bit. And he had that god-awful 0 for 20, whatever skid it was, 23, 24, 20, I forget what it was. I think he broke it up on Friday night. But given all that going on that's gone wrong, they're in a good spot. They're in a good spot. You know, Abbott was good tonight.
Yep. You would like to see him get just at least a couple more outs. Like it was either one or two more outs to get through the inning and be eligible for the win. But he exits, maybe it was 4 1/3, 4 2/3. With just the one run and 79 pitches. So,
yeah, he wants to go a little deeper innings wise, no doubt about it. But he bloated the bases, and Trey Turner was coming up, and David Bell, in retrospect, definitely made the right call bringing in Fernando Cruz to put that fire out, and it worked. He's been good though for the most part. I definitely would have loved to see him go deeper tonight. You know, Ashcraft's had a couple bad outings. He needs to get it together and be a little more consistent. But Nick Lodolo, who's pitching tomorrow night, has been dynamite. He's like giving up one run in 12 innings and two starts. You can't ask much more than that. Martinez, you know, he had two starts. He's going to start again coming up here because Montas is out, and he hasn't been great in those starts, so he probably needs to pick it up. And then, you know, you mentioned Hunter Green, and I get David Bell saying a step forward. I would much rather have seven innings and two runs, seven innings and three runs, seven innings, four runs. Ain't all that great, but at least he did become a little more pitch efficient in that game than what he's shown. Because even in games when he's pitching well, he's lucky to get through the fifth because he's already bumping up to 100 pitches every time. And
Let me give you this stat, though. Maybe this will kind of put some things into perspective a little bit for you. And this is from a day ago. But in per starting pitcher, here's the run support that each starting pitcher has gotten in the games that they pitched. Graham Ashcraft, 8 runs per game. Nick Martinez, 7.5 runs per game. Nick Lodolo, 6 runs per game. Abbott, 4.75 per game. Montas, 4.6 per game. Hunter Green, 2.2 per game.
Yeah, that'll even out over the course of a season. But yeah, sure. That's bad. Yeah. What are you thinking? That just puts him under a tremendous amount of pressure, and
well, he kind of alluded to that last night in his presser. Is he puts himself under a tremendous amount of pressure already, and then you're figuring probably in the same way that Joe Burrow puts himself under pressure because you've gotten the contract, right? So you want to go out and show people that you are the ace on this staff. You're not out there just, you know, mailing it in because you got paid. I wouldn't think, if you're an actual competitor, which Hunter Green seems to be. And how much easier is it to be pitching with, you know, 4 to 6, 8 runs of run support as opposed to 2?
Yeah, you're going to be much more free and easy. I mean, you just are. There's no
doubt. He's a hurler anyway. What do we know about Hunter Green? He's a fastball thrower. That's it. That's his bread and butter. It's his fastball. Right. So it certainly makes it a lot harder to get those sliders in or curveballs in the spots where you need to get them when you're pitching with a lot of runs behind you as opposed to just a couple.
When you're afraid to make a mistake and you think you have to be perfect, yes. And he's, you know, you want to win games, no doubt about it. And here's a stat that was frightening about Hunter Green that I heard the other night. So I think it's 109 pitchers for the Reds have made 50 starts, and all of them have at least 10 wins except one.
Ooh.
Yeah. Hunter. Now, that's a stat.
It's also been a year where last year, if you go back to last year, that was certainly a transition year, a rebuild year, and there's no other way to call it. That's when you bring up that as many rookies as the Reds did last year, and you're the guy that's at the top of the rotation. Where are you finding those wins, really?
Yeah, you're not. I agree, but other guys were able to find them. Abbott was able to find them. But you're right. It's still, you forget how young the guy is.
Sure.
Right? It's easy to forget that. And you can't forget that. There's been so many. The Hall of Fame is filled with pitchers that came up and didn't get stuff done right away. And it took them a while to get going. And they found their groove. And then by the time they hit their prime, they're a perennial 20-game winner. I'm not saying Hunter's going to do that, but you can't rule it out. It's way too early to rule that out. I feel like he's still got to have another out pitch that he hasn't found confidence in yet, right? I think he's got confidence in maybe two pitches.
Yeah.
And beyond that, it's hard to be a starting pitcher and get through the lineup a couple of times like they're supposed to do. And be able to do that when you're just using two pitches. So hopefully he keeps developing a third and a fourth and gets more and more confidence in him. We shall see. I guarantee you this, his pitching coach will be working on that because that guy's a darn good pitching coach. And hopefully they'll figure it out because the talent is there. There's no doubt about it.
Now, you did bring up Ellie De La Cruz and how he's been absolutely ridiculous. This comes courtesy of the Reds Twitter page. But since the solar eclipse on April 8th, oddly enough, he is slashing .359, .479, .846. He has 6 home runs, 12 RBI, 13 runs, 5 stolen bases, and a 1.325 OPS. Now, that all said, that was yesterday. As of today, I mean, his stat line tonight was 1-for-3 with 2 more runs scored, 2 RBI, a home run, a walk, a strikeout, and a stolen base.
So he's essentially had 7 home runs in 2 weeks, right? Is that what?
Yeah, since April 8th.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's been on fire. He is must-see TV. You cannot turn away when that guy's at the plate.
And he is still batting 6th because I say what you want about David Bell. He is, I don't know when he decided he was loyal to his batting order, but this year that is the hill he is ready to die on is being a just going to hell in high water for his lineup until he finally forced to make a change because of an illness or an injury or something.
Well, I guess Steer finally moved up. Was that because of an injury or an illness?
That was because you had CES and you had Candelaria both sick.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, God. Yeah, he definitely is, sticking to that. But I don't know. I would move Ellie up. I want him at the plate as many times as I can in a game.
Well, he did finally move Fairchild out of the 3 spot, thank God. But he moved him to the 1 spot.
You know, say what you will. I know you're not a big Stewie fan, but he's actually performed okay.
He's been serviceable.
That's all. But he's a backup player.
You're too. Right. You're right. That's all, but that does not warrant batting in the first three spots in the lineup.
Agree with that. I do agree with that. I agree, especially when you had Spencer Steer down at seven or whatever he was at.
Well, today he was in the two spot, and
he should stay there. I mean, that guy, even though he hasn't been on fire here lately in terms of hits, but he had a ball tonight that almost went out the dead center field that the guy made a heck of a play on out there. So he's still stinging the ball. He's hitting the ball hard. He's just they're just not – they're finding gloves right now, and he'll be fine. I don't worry about him.
Outside of Stuart Fairchild, I actually didn't hate the lineup, and truthfully, I think moving Ellie down in the lineup is where he's been thriving, and I'm totally okay with leaving him alone right now while he's playing without pressure.
Yeah, I would, but I do like him as many at-bats as possible.
I understand.
I mean, leave him off. I'm not saying that, but boy, oh boy. And you know what? When he gets to the point maybe where he does cut down on those strikeouts and he's more comfortable and swinging at more strikes and laying off more balls, they'll do that.
And then courtesy of C. Trent Rosecrans, I did want to bring up Santiago Espinal. This was 47 minutes ago. Has more home runs this year than Nick Castellanos and twice as many extra base hits. I'm not a giant Santiago Espinal fan. It's an interesting stat nonetheless.
I bet Nick's got a higher batting average. Not that that means much, but
beating 178 can't be that hard, right?
Right.
But
hey, I will say this though.
184. Nick Castellanos is not beating it by very much.
Boy, he's not, is he? God. Nick's got to be one PO'd individual right now, hitting under 200. But listen, I'm glad Espinal was there for the Reds to pick him up, given what happened to them right before the beginning of the season. I mean, a guy with major league experience that can play those positions and cover that middle infield for you, I'm glad they were able to get their hands on him because they've got to hold down the fort. I have no idea when McClain will be back, but it'll be nice to get Friedel back. Hopefully Frankie's not hurt too bad and they can get someone somewhat healthy. And we touched on this, but, kudos to that bullpen too. A boy coming through big time on Sunday to bail out the Reds and win that game on Sunday. They haven't been nearly as bad as I was afraid they might be.
Yeah, and now they're starting to get some of the cavalry back in that spot in particular as Sam Moll the first to come back. And we'll see as they're able to add some warm bodies back in that bullpen. But currently the Reds stand at 13-10. They are 1.5 behind Milwaukee, sitting in third. They're in third place, sitting behind Chicago and Milwaukee there. In the wild card, they are in third as well. But interestingly enough, they are plus 21 in run differential. And as things currently stand at this very moment in time, that puts them behind only Kansas City, which I did not see coming, Arizona. Those are the only two teams they are behind in run differential in all of the big leagues.
That's impressive. Where's Milwaukee in that? Do you have that up? Is it Andy or am I?
That actually may not be correct then. That was just looking at wild card statistics. So they are behind also Baltimore, Cleveland, Atlanta, and Milwaukee. There we go.
They got Baltimore coming up soon, I think. Baltimore's been mashing the ball.
They do have Baltimore coming up soon. Thank you for correcting me on that, though, by the way. And at 120 runs scored, that puts them in – I mean, you're among the elite teams as well with that, as Baltimore at 126, Cleveland at 128, Atlanta at 133, Milwaukee only at 117, Chicago only at 119. And the Dodgers at 124 and San Diego 121, Arizona 134. So really all the teams that you probably want to be mentioned with in that regard.
So we're saying the Reds are going to win the division.
That's maybe a leap of faith, but
I'm going to say it. The hell with it.
That's fine. Maybe put your money there and we'll see. I mean, since you bet on Frankie Montas, just don't bet on the Reds to win the pennant.
Yeah, well, I'm leaving everything else alone. That was bad. I mean, it's gone from bad to worse since I made that bet.
Don't touch Ellie. Don't touch the Reds to win the pennant.
You know what? I might put a bet on. I might just start betting on Brewers players.
Dodgers.
They can feel my curse. Because by God, I don't even tell you what happened during the Masters. I think I ended up with everybody in the field but Scott Scheffler.
Oh my goodness.
And I figured he would win. I mean, he's unbelievable. I don't know if you saw him over the weekend or on Sunday when it was getting dark, but that shot he hit right before they quit playing was just stupid. I mean, this guy's ridiculous.
Well, that sounds par for the course, right?
Yeah. Well, speaking of golf, we can talk about the UC golf team.
Yeah, they had a pretty good weekend, yeah.
They got a kid leading the Big 12 championship. Guy Gingrich, hopefully he can close it out, I guess, tomorrow.
I feel like that's where you want to be, right?
Right, yeah, at the top. This gives me a chance to sing about Doug Martin, a UC golf coach. I've loved him for years. Used to run into him out at the golf ranch all the time, and any success that man gets, he deserves.
He's been on the BCJ pod. I don't know if we had him on the BBP or not, but I know we certainly have had him on the
BCJ pod. Yeah, I know he's been on. And any success they have, he's a good man doing a good job and has been doing it for a while now.
Well, you discuss a kid being at the top of the Big 12. And in baseball, Josh Cross is at the top of the Big 12 in RBI, leading at 53, and he is number two in home runs at 13, behind only Jalen Flores at 14 of Texas. But he's 8 RBI ahead of anybody in the pack. And Cincinnati had another good weekend as they take care of Houston at home. And win the series 2-1 in games of 6-4, 5-4, and 5-8.
Which game I went to?
The loss on Sunday, huh?
Yeah.
Stay away from this team, George.
Oh, it's unbelievable. I go there thinking, you know, hey, I'm going to probably see a sweep, right? I was all fired up for that. And, yeah, that was probably the problem. But it was still a good time. Those games are fun.
Probably. They do travel to Orlando to face those Knights of Gold on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And then they come back to Columbus, actually, where they'll be playing Ohio State on the 30th, a week from now. So,
and quite honestly, they're doing all right in the Big 12. I think they're a 500 overall. I mean, you know, look, at the beginning of the year, and based on what happened last year, going into the Big 12, you're thinking this is not going to be good. Not going to be good. And they've more than held their own. They've played some solid baseball, and hopefully they can close it out and have a pretty good year. That would be nice.
Yep, 23-18 overall, 9-9 in conference, 15-5 at home. So they've certainly been better at home than the 5-13 away record. So we'll see what they're able to do in Orlando. But the season is far from over, as the Big 12 tournament doesn't get underway until May 21st. So they still have a month's time to make some noise there. So
this is the first time we've talked about golf and baseball as far as UC sports ahead of football and or basketball.
Well, it's off season, George.
Yes. It is, but the women got that big commitment last week. How about that?
They did, and we actually were able to host Katrina Merriweather last night on the PvP. If you haven't checked that out, she was with us for almost an hour. Got her to talk about everything from her time at the same high school that Brent graduated from, to coaching the college that I went to her time here at UC, both as a player and a coach, to her time with Team USA. So plenty of stuff there to get to. But you brought it up. So there is one spot left on the roster as we now have Arrington Page. We have Connor Hickman. And where are you wanting to see this one last spot for the Cincinnati basketball team?
Well, I'll tell you, I still and hopefully Page and you know, other newcomers help with that inside scoring punch. But I think they're in a good spot where they can, you know, you probably don't necessarily need a point guard, but I mean, you could take anything right now. If something pops and it's someone that wants to join your program or is a nice fit, you don't have to reach for anything. But obviously, if that young man from Duke wants to take a look at UC and perhaps if that would happen, that would be a hell of an offseason. I mean, it already probably is a pretty good offseason, but that would, you know, to get Page, have the two or three recruits they have coming in, Hickman coming in, bringing guys back, keeping Jizzle James, keeping Dan, keeping CMOS. You know, that's a big part of it now. How many of these programs, you see programs, you know, even Purdue's losing players in the portal. So it's like nobody's safe right now with this portal. It's like you better have a program and a group that loves to be together and, you know, has this kind of chemistry where, you know, they want to be a part of it and continue to be a part of it, or you're going to lose valuable pieces, and it's happening to everybody. And so just that in and of itself is a success for this program and for Wes. But if he can add, Stewart is his name from?
Yeah, Sean Stewart.
Yeah, Sean Stewart. You add that to the equation, and holy God, that's a good offseason.
Yeah, he's just a five-star McDonald's All-American.
Right, exactly. Exactly. That's just your run-of-the-mill player that comes to Clifton, right?
Who's upset that Cooper Flagg's going to be taking his minutes. So he hopped in the portal.
Right. Right. Every program is going through this, and everyone's learning how to negotiate it, navigate it, keep your players, in some cases, run off your players. It's, you know, I saw some of this coming, but not to this degree. This has gotten nuts.
Yeah, it should be interesting to see what happens.
College basketball and football in the news damn near year-round.
Yep. We'll see what happens as the portal does close on May 1st. So we're roughly a week away from an end to all of this chaos and the dust finally settling in. So while the portal will still be open when we record next week, hopefully we have an idea as to what that last roster spot is looking like, because I would love the dust to be settled around here sooner than later.
Yeah, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. And then when does it open again after that? Any idea? I don't know offhand. I can't keep up with it.
I don't actually know the answer to that. I wouldn't imagine.
But it just seems like it never ends.
I don't know if there's another
next year.
Is there another? Okay, not until after the season next year.
Right.
Okay. Thank goodness.
So things should be locked in then.
May 1st. Yes.
In about a week or so. Very good. Other than that, not a ton of movement on the football front outside of Mason Fletcher's younger brother, Max Fletcher, has transferred from Arkansas with 3 years of eligibility after he sits his redshirt season out, backing up his brother. I think that this speaks to what Mason thinks about this staff and where this program is, because your brother from Australia doesn't just transfer from Arkansas if things aren't on the up and up here in Cincinnati.
Yeah, I would agree with that. That's very cool, too. It's very cool that they'll get to, you know, spend the season together. And you know, that's guys that age being that far away from home. And I think their parents made it in for that Arkansas game, right?
They did, yeah.
Yeah, which was very cool. It's good for them. I'm happy for them. And hopefully, you know, obviously, you know, Mason was happy anyway, but maybe he's happier having his younger bro around.
Well, I'm sure the parents are happy that they don't have to make two different stops when they come to the States now to visit.
Yeah, exactly. That simplifies things for them as well. One-stop shopping is always the best.
For sure. Real quick, as we're wrapping things up, FC Cincinnati does get a win. They're able to put two on the board instead of just one. Of course, it came the week that I didn't bet them. So thanks, FC Cincinnati, for nothing.
So you're as bad as me when it comes to that.
Just football.
They needed that, though. I mean, they even, like, some of the players talked about entering that match thinking, oh, my God, are we going on a three-game skid here? Because they had lost two in a row. They needed that so badly. And they got it. You know, now they're back home against Colorado Saturday night, who's not a bad club. But, you know, they're kind of back on track, third place. Probably not exactly where they want to be in terms of all the – but they're in the mix. And they still have time to get it together. And it was funny. It was quite a relief for them to get that win and maybe feel like – they were back to playing the way they're supposed to play. I think that was the most important thing they talked about after the game. It's just, it felt like us again, finally, because I don't know what was going on there for a while, but it was definitely ugly from where they had been. And there had to be a lot of questions because there has been some changes, and there had to be a lot of questions about whether or not they have the right mix. This doesn't guarantee they do. They got to do it again this weekend against Colorado, but it gives you something to springboard off of, and at least you got some hope, right?
Absolutely. Outside of that, anything going on in high school sports that you wanted to touch on before we get out of here?
No, all is quiet there as well. You know, the big thing in my mind happened last week when D. Alexander
became a Bearcat, so hometown hero of her own right. But all right, George. Well, that's going to wrap it up unless you got anything else.
No, I'm good, man. I'm going to go pop a beer and play some PGA Tour or something.
Very good. Well, that was another episode of George in the Jungle. Again, thanks to Remington Tavern for sponsoring us. You can find them at 8892 Glendale Milford Road, 45140, where they have their daily happy hour from 3 to 7 p.m., $5 bourbon whiskey Wednesdays, bottle cap bonanza Thursdays, 7 to 9 p.m. Still don't have a clue what that is. And Instagram at RemyTavCincy with a Y. Follow them on Facebook as well. But for my co-host George Vogel, I'm Aaron Smith. We'll see you Tuesday next week, 9 o'clock.